This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Ben Standing of The Athletic stopping by post Commanders draft. Before we get to that, what did you make of yesterday's big announcement, and do you think that this is going to happen, or are we going the way of Leonsis in Virginia?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously things have been, you know, incrementally moving in this direction, and, you know, we got a heads up a week or so ago that something may be happening imminently, and here we are. You know, to me, go back to, you know, 18 months, 2 years, and it all came down to, would the D.C. Council spend the money? And that was even before they gave $500 million to Monumental Sports for their refurbishing. So, you know, we'll see how stern those who are opposing giving out the money are with this. I mean, the fact that it is now here, that isn't just a hypothetical, that there's a deal on the table, that the Commanders are ready to go, you know, maybe that changes some minds of people who would have been against it, because, you know, it was like, I'm not for this thing. But now it's here. To get an NFL team, to get a new stadium that would obviously be a centerpiece for this city to attract other events, you know, that's got to be tempting. I would imagine that somehow this ultimately gets done, but, you know, my guess is it's not going to be a straight line from yesterday's announcement to that moment.
Yeah, it never is. As far as the draft goes, more surprising to you, not a single trade back or not taking a single pass rusher off the edge?
Probably not a trade back, but, you know, once they got through the first two picks, you know, that those are their best opportunities to get, you know, some viable picks. You know, the strength of this draft was in those middle rounds. You know, the it wasn't like a top tier, a really strong top tier, and that the next few rounds kind of like leveled out, that you get good value in round 3 and 4 at least. So I think once they were in a position where they weren't going to get extra picks there, it's probably when it was like, okay, well, we're just going to move forward here and take these picks. Obviously, you know, we talked a ton about edge rusher. You know, you would have guessed that would have been the case, but, you know, my view of this whole draft was they don't have to do anything they don't want to do, because in free agency, they largely covered up any kind of issues. I'm not saying that they're good they're good enough at edge rusher. I don't know if I think that at all, but especially like if we get to the postseason, they don't have youth, they don't have athleticism, they don't have an obvious like guy who's going to go out and get, you know, 8+ sacks, but, you know, they should be better against the run, and they have, you know, five or six guys that you could say, hey, these can be part of our rotation. We'll see if they do any free agency. So yeah, a little surprised, but again, it's not like the picks that they made were like, you know, wacky or anything. They also addressed areas where we said they needed some help. So, you know, something had to give, and, you know, depending how you want to look at it, unfortunately, they didn't get the edge guy.
So it sounds to me like you would not be stunned if they didn't still sign a veteran edge. I think it's a foregone conclusion that they've still got to go out and pick your guy. I mean, Judon or Preston Smith or whoever, at least one of those guys. But you think they could just go into the season with what they've got on the roster now?
Well, I mean, all the guys that are out there, for the most part, I mean, unless there's just some kind of, you know, deep undercover guy that we, you know, I just don't know anything about. But in terms of like the headliners, like the guys you just mentioned, Za'Darius Smith as well, like all those guys are, you know, over 30 as well. This team needs to get younger. That's not going to do that. Now, does that help them more potentially this year? You know, sure. I mean, Za'Darius Smith, just to use him, had 9.5 sacks last year. That's more than anybody else on this team had. I'm sure other teams around the league will be knocking on his door as well. But, you know, unless they think that one of these guys is going to be viable enough to be like sort of top three in a rotation, can help against the run, you know, give them some pass rush. I'm not saying it's that they wouldn't. I'm just saying I don't know that it's like they've got to do it. Za'Darius Smith for me is kind of the line after him. You know, I don't know that it really – I don't know that anybody necessarily moves the needle based on, you know, where they are in their careers and things like that.
I guess I just don't look at their edges and see anyone you'd be blocking that would be really good if you brought someone in here. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, they drafted in the 7th round, got hurt last year. Maybe they like him. Jalen Holmes flashed a bit. I mean, Andre Jones, I think, you know, is on the team or he isn't, and I don't know how much of a difference that makes. Jacob Martin in his career is not really proven to be a pass rusher. So for me, they just don't have it. Like Cleland Farrell, Dietrich Wise, those guys play the run okay maybe, but it just seems like they've got to do something, especially coming out of the draft. I thought, you know, they might draft a kicker as an example. They don't do it, and then today they signed Matt Gay. It feels to me like Edge is kind of that same thing where now they go back to the drawing board and they throw money at somebody, whether it's Za'Darius Smith or somebody else, and say, we need someone who can get his 8 sacks opposite Dorrance Armstrong on passing downs.
I mean, yeah, I agree that would be ideal. I'm just saying, based on what I see out there, you know, Matthew Judon had 5 sacks last year. Von Miller had 6. I'm not going to pretend I've gone back to watch all their tape. This, you know, sacks are not always a good indicator of how effective somebody was. But, you know, the old story, if they were really good to be a difference maker, they probably would be already on a team by now. Of course, teams at a certain point in the free agency process, they wait till post-draft, so a signee doesn't count against the compensatory pick calculation. So that's why some players are still available. But yeah, again, look, they could go out and sign with these guys. I get it, but I guess I'm just saying that even if they did, for the most part, I wouldn't be thinking to myself, "Wow, they really fixed this problem."
Oh,
I just think that, you know, maybe they do, maybe they don't. Like I said, they've got 6 guys you can, you know, argue would be on the team or you know, could be. And, you know, again, Za'Darius Smith aside, I'm happy to see, I'm happy to admit if I'm missing somebody, but just in terms of the sort of the obvious names, I don't know that they necessarily, you know, change much for me, whether they do sign them or not.
Ben Standing of The Athletic on Grant and Danny looking at the draft class. Trey Amos in the 2nd round. Would he start possibly after a competition? Is that the plan, that he'd be a boundary corner? You'd have him and Lattimore and kick Sanders still into the nickel, which was the original plan? Or did they see enough from Mikey outside that maybe he plays out there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's a really fascinating question. You know, going back to the original, you know, when they originally drafted Sanders still, he was going to be the slot guy, and he was ready for that. They were talking about that, and then I don't think they wanted to move him outside, but as we remember, you know, the other cornerbacks were just, you know, falling apart all over the place, and even when they got Lattimore, you know, he's hurt, so he didn't play for a bit, and Sanders still did a good job. And, you know, I was, you know, talking to somebody with another team before the draft, and they were like, look, generally speaking, if you've got a slot corner who can play outside, you don't move him back to the slot. So, look, they needed more size on the perimeter anyway. They needed more depth anyway. And, you know, Sanders still is the only one you could have said for sure would be on the roster in 2026. So, if nothing else, they do have, you know, another piece there for the longer haul. But, yeah, Amos is going to be an outside guy. You know, if he can come in and be a contributor right away, then moving Sanders still back to slot to me would make a ton of sense. They also have, you know, Jonathan Jones who can play either outside or inside. He's, you know, there's a lot to like about him, the veteran experience. He's tough against the run, even though he's not the biggest guy. So, you know, and then you got Noah Igbinoghene, who obviously was pretty good last year in the slot. So not to, like, punt the question and be like, hey, you know, they got options. But it is kind of like that. I just,
sure.
To me, it would be, what do I want to do with Sanders still long-term? If I want him to be outside, then he'll be on the outside, and I'll have Amos maybe next year if Lattimore is gone. But if they want him to be in the slot, then move him to the slot. I just don't want him necessarily moving around a ton in terms of like learning positions. You know, obviously he can be flexible, but what is he going to be? That's going to be the question. And I would think this is a sign that it's a slot, but we'll see.
It took Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, the wide receiver in the fourth round at 128 overall. How much do you see him figuring into their offense, and do you think he'll be their punt and maybe kick returner?
Yeah, I think that the fact that he can do both, you know, return and be a factor in a return game and on offense is why you make a move like that. You know, their top two returners last year is Zacchaeus and Crowder. One is signed elsewhere, and the other one's not on the team. So I think that's got to be a huge factor. You know, adding speed on offense to me was really critical. I didn't so much care if it was a running back or a receiver. It needed to be from somewhere. They did it with a receiver. Guys can run a 4.34 40 time. It looked like Virginia Tech got him the ball a lot, sort of quick screens and slants, and just, you know, get him the ball in space as best you can and let him go from there. And, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, I think, can design that. So, you know, I don't think he's going to be, you know, frontline receiver snaps barring injury, or he just comes in and crushes it because they have some other guys. But again, you look long term. Well, even if we assume that Terry McLaurin signs an extension, the only other receiver they had beyond this season is Luke McCaffrey. So, you know, they've given themselves a potential future slot. And, you know, if he's able to come in right away and show he can help on offense, then, yeah, you put that 4.34 speed somewhere on the field and get going.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Otani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Do you feel pretty confident that McLaurin gets extended at some point around the start of training camp?
I would be surprised if he's not back. I mean, you know, unless the money talk is just out of whack, I would imagine they find somewhere, you know, some way to get this done. Obviously, what he did on the field last year, on top of his entire career, was very impressive, the leadership and all that. And, you know, look, the majority of the moves that have been made this offseason have been connected by one mindset, and that is help Jaden Daniels. And taking Terry McLaurin away from him from the long haul would not be wise in that front. So I would assume they get something done. And, you know, if you're not going to somehow pay Terry McLaurin, then, you know, what kind of message is that sending to everybody else? He's literally the poster child for what you want out of a leader, a teammate, a player. So I would be surprised if it's not done, whether it's training camp or OTAs. We remember in the last time he was up for a deal, he did miss some of the early part of the offseason workout because of it wasn't wholly out, but it was voluntary. So you'd like to think he'd get there and participate, but we'll see.
Ben Standing of The Athletic. They take Josh Connerly at 29 overall. You actually, on the show before the draft, told us you wouldn't be surprised if they went tackle. So kudos to you. You were thinking outside the box a little bit there. But walk me through your projection for the starting offensive line at this point.
Yeah, I mean, similar to the cornerback situation like we just discussed, I think the offensive line could be really fascinating. I'm going to assume that Connerly has the inside track to get the right tackle job. You know, it's always he played left side in college. For offensive linemen in recent years, the transition from college to pro is a lot trickier than it has been in years past, just because of the way offenses are in college and what they ask linemen to do. But if he's able to make that transition, if he's able to show something in camp that they feel confident putting him out there, then he's the right tackle. And then I think what becomes interesting is, what do they do with Brandon Coleman? You know, to me, I would look to see about putting Brandon Coleman on the left side, put him in competition with Nick Allegretti. You know, I don't want to keep having Coleman move all over the place. You know, if somehow Coleman were to beat out Connerly for the right tackle job, That would be surprising to me, but let's just, you know, maybe that happens. But ultimately, he's going to land at guard. Ultimately, Condor is going to get that job. And so I would just assume have Coleman be on the left side. You know Cosby's on the right side eventually. You can have Andrew Wiley or Nate Herbig be that fill-in at right guard. Or if Coleman were to win the left guard spot, you can move Allegretti over. I'm not knocking Allegretti, but, like, you know, the move isn't just about, right, it's not just about upgrading right tackle. It's about now moving Coleman somewhere else, because obviously he was a third-round pick and he showed some good promise, and a lot of people thought he'd be better off at guard anyway. So I think that, to me, is going to be really fascinating. Do they, you know, do they give Coleman and Wiley real shot to be at right tackle, or do they just kind of quickly say, hey, we'd like to see what you guys can do at guard as much as anything, and go from there? But, yeah, I mean, I think Tunsil, Coleman or Allegretti at left guard, Biadasz, Cosme, but with a fill-in until he's back, and then Connerly. That, to me, would be the best guess as to what a week one lineup looks like.
Ben's cranking out good content and has a lot of intel on this draft class. Depth chart analysis that he posted was really good over the weekend as well, so go check him out at The Athletic, worth a subscription. Benjamin, thank you, sir, as always. We appreciate you.
Grant, time flies by when I'm talking to you. Appreciate it, man. Thanks.
You got it, brother. That's Ben Standing of The Athletic.